welcome to selfdiscoveryradio.com. With over 1,400 shows, we have the answers for you. Enjoy your listening on selfdiscoveryradio.com. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Choose Positive Living. I'm your host, Sarah Troy, and my guest today is Donna Saeed. We're going to be talking about the Tooth Fairy Transformation. And just be, just do, and just live. Do, be, live. You know, tooth fairies, it's that wonderful, magical, mystical thing that we believed in when we were young. It was a wonderful experience. And Donna's released the Tooth Fairy Experience, Be, Do, Live transformational events and retreat programs designed for women who are seeking more meaningful, purposeful, and vision in their expanding private and public lives. And she has a wonderful program called The Boundary Map. And we're going to be talking about all of that today, but mostly about igniting our dreams, having a dream in the first place and allowing that dream to grow. Where would we be if we were not dreamers, if we did not believe in the vision of our dream, if we were not inspired by it, if we didn't actualize it? What a dull world we would be, and we would have made ourselves extinct a long time ago. But it is the time of the woman now. The woman's right to dream, to be, to expand, to grow, to spread her wings and be as wonderful as she is meant to be. How do you set yourself free? How do you become that little tooth fairy, flowering from one to the other and just allowing those wonderful mystical things to happen in life without us getting in the way of ourselves? Well, Donna is going to share those secrets with us. So let's bring on Donna and discover what it is that we need to know so that we can be, we can do, and we can live. Welcome to the show, love.
Oh, thank you so much, Sarah.
So I love the Tooth Fairy Project. I think that is, you know, the title for a start. I love it, I love it. I think it's wonderful. And, why the Tooth Fairy? You know, what is it about the Tooth Fairy that has got you so excited?
What has me so excited about the Tooth Fairy is it's just a concept that we can grab onto. It was a long time ago, some years ago, one of my very best good friends when I was we were in middle school, in fact, we're still friends, and she said, you know, Donna, you're just the Tooth Fairy. That's what it is. you're looking for the truth. You're helping people get down to what is true, and that's all you really want to do, because it sets people free and it sets you free, and it's so true. And so as the Tooth Fairy Project launched and developed, so many women just really resonated with it, and then there was sort of the misnomer of them calling me the Tooth Fairy, which I always say that is so far above my pay grade. I cannot be the Tooth Fairy. No one is the Tooth Fairy, but you can become one for yourself. Mm-hmm. And that expands your inner knowing and your outer world so much. And then you can also then become one for one another as witnesses, compassion, and just invitation to the depth that is each one of us.
Mm-hmm. And the depth of what is. I mean, that's, you know, we love to overcomplicate things, isn't it? And, you know, people love to believe in fairies. And yet, oh, no, that's a childhood fantasy. No, it isn't. I see them, you know, and go for a walk in certain woods. You find them, you see them there. And if we're willing to open up to truth in general and stop dictating what truth should look like, we discover there are some things out there in the world and within us that are way beyond our limitational thinking.
It's so true. When I have worked with women one-on-one and even in group settings, I've found that the things that they will say to themselves or about a circumstance or something that they've endured or experienced, it's really a series of questions I ask them compassionately, for sure, and say, is that true? Is that true? Mm-hmm. And just a pause to reflect on, is it true? Is what I'm saying true? And is what I'm feeling about it reflective of who I really am? And it changes everything. It's almost as if the camera just swings sometimes 180 degrees, and the spark and the light in their eyes is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's my favorite thing to do is to watch a woman's eyes just spark like the fireworks above Walt Disney World's castle. I mean, it's just beautiful, and it just churns my soul to see someone free themselves, to feel that. It's beautiful.
I mean, you know, there is the truth that is being imposed upon us. You know, that society's expectation of how you should behave, how you should think, what you should say, what you should do, those horrible box limitations. And, you know, we've bought into that's the truth. But when we decide to take off the, you know, the blinders and remove the boxed walls and just, you know, spread our arms and then really look to what is our truth, you know, what am I reacting to and what really is the truth that comes from within? That feeling of real connection. I get it. I understand it. This is my truth. And it's like a fire that lights up inside of you, isn't it? And a breath of fresh air and an expansion of your arms and just feeling like your whole soul and spirit bursting from you when you come to the realization of what your truth is, that discovery.
And so often I've seen, when I worked with women in groups and one-on-one, I see them almost appearing to be captive of stories or statements that others have made to them about them, that when they choose to answer the question honestly for themselves in a witness of compassion, they went to say, no, that's not true. Well, and then to answer then, what is true? Oh my goodness. There are sometimes tears. Sometimes there's a lot of laughter, sometimes indignation, because, you know, to feel as though you've agreed with something that wasn't true for so very long, just because that's the story that was going around. Yeah. It seems almost, sometimes I've seen women say, I'm so insulted. Well, I'm glad to hear that you're insulted by something or offended, or if your sensibilities are offended by something that isn't true about you that you're agreeing to or you're agreeing with. And that's where the breakthroughs come, and they start to take inventory of themselves and their divine design. You start to notice how they were designed, that it's not faulty.
Right.
It's an operating system that's fantastic and fascinating, and it's designed on purpose. And my goodness, there's only one design like it, and they're running it. It's just beautiful.
Yeah, it's, you know, stepping in the inside out, and, you know, you're talking about that indignation. You know, people, you've just crashed their entire belief, everything that they've learned in their lives, and they realize, oh my God, it's all wrong. And, you know, there is a defensiveness that comes up wanting to protect it because they feel a vulnerability. You know, I suddenly know nothing, and I thought I was smart, you know. And, you know, the smarts are that beautiful intuitive self, right? That sense of knowingness that comes out of you, that calm instinctual self of just kind of knowing what's right when it's right. And because we've been so dictated by information, we have forgotten to look at the divine's intellect and the way that it communicates with us. But there is that initial kind of knee-jerk reaction. What do you mean, I don't know?
Well, and that is an interesting thing that you bring up, because in the Truth Fair experience, that's one of the things that I take, and that's not really in a... the boundary map thing is a little bit different, because that's the entry point. But in the Truth Fair experience, that I listen. That's one of the catchphrases I listen for when women are speaking about themselves or to others or in response to anything, the catchphrase of, well, I don't know. And the truth of the matter is, you do know. You absolutely do know. And it's a very careful question that I ask, but I get a lot of success with it because it's an important question. And I say, are you sure? Because I think that you actually do know. What is it? I mean, because I don't know. It usually suggests that it's a covering. It's a hesitation. Because if you inquire within, you'll get an answer about it. You may not know immediately what it is, but you will know if you're inquiring.
We have so much inside of us that is screaming out to us, trying to tell us things. You know, the heart and its resonance, you know, its truth, its passion, and the way that it sees things, you know, the soul's intellect and that divine knowledge, that universal knowledge coming through us, you know, our spirit wanting to jump into action. And you know, it's ready to burst from us with that knowingness that you talked about. But our head goes and gets in the way, doesn't it? And it's like, well, I shouldn't listen to this, you know. Where are the facts? Where's the detail? Where's the validation? You know, where's the piece of paper? Where's this? Where's that? And we've got to remember that the mind is programming. It's a, you know, an encyclopedia or a computer of data. And we can draw on that knowledge any time because it's stored there. And we know what to do with the heart and soul and spirit's knowledge that it gives us, you know, by extracting what we need to know at the time we need to know it from the mind. But if we live up in the mind all the time and are disconnected from the rest of ourselves, constantly like a hamster on a treadmill, going around and around and around, answers, questions, and never getting to the point.
That's true. One of the things that I find so fascinating about inquiring within, when I ask women to consider what the answer might be, or to just really take a moment to reflect, oftentimes the reason that they hesitate is because while the evidence may be there to support the answer that they know is true, it sometimes or most oftentimes requires that if they admit what they know, they admit what's true to themselves, that they then must make some decisions that they've been avoiding. And I call that the roundabout of truth. You come to a fork in the, or a T in the road rather, and you can continue, you'll go round and round and round the circle unless and until you make a decision about the truth that you know. And I always say, you know, this truth fairy business is serious, it's fascinating, it's serious, it's beautiful, it's expanding, and yet it requires some courage. Oftentimes it requires courage to say, you know what, this is the truth about this particular thing. I'm going to acknowledge it, and I also need to acknowledge that I can't unknow that truth. Once I know it, I have to make some decisions about it, or I have to make some adjustments. And that might be a 5-degree adjustment. It may not be a 90-degree turn or 180 degrees. And that's the good thing, is that we don't have to jerk the wheel really hard to make some progress and to go in the direction of north that we want to go in.
Yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes you're in that highway traffic and it's just gridlock and you feel you're not getting anywhere. There's an exit over there, you know.
That's right.
Go off on the exit, maybe stop somewhere for a cup of coffee, take some time, breathe, refocus, and get back on a different road that's going to take you to where you need to go. You know, people get stuck in a groove, don't they? They get stuck in the same old thing and they wonder why they're getting the same old results.
That's right. And circling an issue or circling a what looks like a barrier, if we were actually on the road, it wouldn't make any sense to us to drive right into a barrier and circle it when we're trying to get somewhere. We just wouldn't do it. We would find which way do I want to, you know, I'll yield to oncoming traffic, but I'm going to get off this circle and I'm going to go in the direction that I need to go to get where I need to be.
I mean, it's the same thing as if there's an accident on the highway or there's a train wreck or whatever. You know, you don't want to stay there and get caught up in that, you know, the consequential drama that's going to come from it. Yet as human beings, we seem to walk towards, like a, you know, like a magnet, towards any form of kind of drama that's going on in life and kind of get caught up in it. And it's like the Pied Piper, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, one of the things that I find so it's fascinating, I say. It's not fascinating, it doesn't feel fascinating when it's happening to people, but that kind of leads into the idea of this boundary map that I talk about, the drama that they approach. They seem to magnetize toward that sort of thing. But what I find is there's a certain comfort in familiarity, mm-hmm. even if it's familiar nonsense. At least I know what's next. At least I know what to expect. And the unknown seems a little too risky to step into. So what if I'm going to stay with the audience, if you will? In the boundary map, I talk about who's in your front row. Well, sometimes we just want to see the same faces in the front row, regardless of what they're throwing at us. If one guy's taking his shirt off and you wish he didn't, but you're going to keep a straight face the whole time. I mean, you just, you know, they keep them there. And they're also, how rude would I be or if I told them to leave, or I feel a sense of obligation, or I'd feel guilty if I told them, you know, I don't really want you here, or you're really distracting the rest of what's going on here by your, you know, clipping your toenails while I'm in the middle of trying to. Well, right, but there are people in our lives sometimes I've found that why are you here?
Yeah.
What are you contributing here? And you're not even paying attention, and yet you insist on being here. So that's where I ask, the boundary map invites us to examine who is present in our world and why, and what their value is and what our value is in that circumstance. Because your show, as I say in quotes, your show is really a good one. It's important. What you're here to do is really important. And the people who want to take up space in your immediate, say, front row, backstage, VIP areas, they're there because they like it.
Yeah.
They like it. And there's a reason they like it. And what's the price of admission? Well, I say minimum price of admission for anyone in my life is dignity and respect.
Yes.
That's minimum. Yeah. And I don't even have a seat for everyone who treats me with dignity and respect, although I would love to. Mm-hmm. It's just limited seating. And but I would engage anyone, but that's the minimum. If you want to engage me at all, at the grocery store, it's got to be that way.
Yeah.
And that's where we start with people. And the good thing about boundary mapping, and that's why it's the entry point, is because this program can just meet a woman where she is. It can just meet you where you are. You don't even have to know what it means to have boundaries, because you'll learn very quickly what it means.
And of course, boundaries is not putting up walls. It's really dividing, you know, as you said, your audience. You know, you've got to decide, you know, is this role I'm playing, you know, inviting a wrong audience? You know, do I need to change my role so that I become more invitational to the people that will respect my role? So we sometimes need to kind of, in a way, isolate ourselves to kind of rediscover what it is we really want and project that out rather than, you know, a reflection of how other people are treating us.
It's true. The first is to examine, if I don't like the way the people in the front row are treating me, what's attracted them to me in the first place, like you're saying. Mm-hmm. That's really important to take a look at. I mean, if you're doing some sort of body vaudeville, you're going to get a very different audience than my friend, my opera singer friend who travels the world. I mean, of course, you're not going to get the same audience, and you're very right about that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the other thing is it's so very easy to get swayed by the energies around you. And, you know, that let's just face it, there are piranhas in life. You know, they go after people that are vulnerable and suck their energy dry because they can. And, you know, if you know that you're particularly vulnerable while you're going through transition, you know, you're going into, you know, your self-discovery, your recovery of self, you know, I think it's a good time to actually kind of step back completely away from people, because otherwise every time you're feeding yourself, they're right there to zap that right from you.
Well, that's true. And, you know, in my years in the theater and my younger years, the audience, the seats in the theater, there may be two people in that theater while we're rehearsing, because we're not ready for an audience. Mm-hmm. To sell tickets. I use the metaphor of the theater, certainly, but they just aren't ready for that. And I wouldn't want someone while I'm rehearsing or learning my lines or figuring out what my character is or to endure actually really endure my stumbling and my just trying to find my mark and my light and all those things. I'm going to rehearse some before I'm going to invite anyone in, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, because you're always going to have that friend that's going to tell you, you know, you're delivering your lines wrong. No, you shouldn't do that. You should perhaps do this. And that's not what you want, because that's their projection of what you should do. You've had that all the time from other people. You need to now stand tall in, you know, in your big girl socks and go, what do you want to do? What serves you? And you can't stand tall in your own life until you kind of, you know, get up from underneath everybody else's opinion.
That's absolutely true. And when I remember, you know, one of the best directors I ever worked under, he, the best advice he gave, and it was deeper than it sounded. He said, you know what? The advice I'm going to give to you all is know your lines and don't fall off the stage. Well, he means that in a lot of metaphorical ways, but you know, what I've realized is that the divine design for my life, he's like the director. The divine is like the director. And, you know, just like the director, he could see my potential in that character role in ways I couldn't even imagine, and would give me pieces and bits to understand and a script and all sorts of things to work with and other characters to meld with. And it would blossom. And there it was. It just came out. And it was hard work getting there. It was always hard work getting there. But the end result was always, always beautiful. But even with that kind of direction, it was so important for me to always follow my instincts. My instincts were the greatest asset I had as a performer, as an actress. And it's such a metaphor for life. I can't even say enough about it.
No, I completely agree with you. It's, you know, that gut, you know, and people say, but you know, why? How do you know? I don't know, I just know, you know, but it feels right. And you're so, you know, you can't go any other way than that way, because it is right, you know, and that is everything being aligned and telling you do this, and that instinctualness. And if we trusted that more, instead of, again, the head getting in the way and starting to dissect and analyze and theorize, you know, we probably would be a lot more peaceful people.
I think so. And I think there's so much to be said about finding out what that instinct feels like. It's really a resonance with the energy that's happening in your immediate self around you, and being able to differentiate between is that energy congruent with my own, or is it repelling what's going on, and being in tune with yourself enough to know what am I feeling and what next?
And, you know, we've got somebody who's being wounded, you know, being abused, whether it's child, spouse, you know, work, you know, the boss, you know, bullying or an abuse is still very rampant on all levels nowadays. And, you know, it's a lot of what we have to do is that if we're being bullied, we need to actually understand is that we're allowing ourselves to be bullied, because that person can't bully you if you have that, as you told, that dignity and that respect boundary. They're not going to bully you because they know they can't. They're going to go for somebody else that's weaker. And, you know, if we are being bullied, if we are being abused, in some level we've invited that, you know, not consciously, but subconsciously, perhaps because we did not feel worthy, we didn't have a self-value, we don't understand that we're worth so much more than the value that's been imposed upon us. Yeah, it's hard for those people to kind of start looking at, I really am worth more, and start changing that dialogue and start changing that role in their lives. How would you help them through that?
Well, where I always start with those kinds of tangles are asking women to take a moment, and we step aside from it for a moment, and I ask them to take some inventory, take some self-inventory, and talk to me about, and I ask them to go ahead and put it down with their hand, with a pen. What are some of the things that you're known for? You know, Kathy is just the best at blank. But, and to start getting that ball rolling on taking your own inventory so that you can discover what your actual design is, what you were designed to do best. And that will grow a sense of self-awareness and then self-respect. And I mix a lot of self-respect, just exploratory experiences with self-compassion, which is a really tough one to wrap a mind around when we're not taught that so much. But self-compassion, and certainly from that is born this idea that I actually am pretty fantastic to be with. People enjoy me. I'm useful. I'm valuable. And here are the ways that I am. And that makes it very easy to charge admission.
Yes.
Makes it very easy because, and I think, and I always tell women too, you know, as weird as this sounds, you're going to have to BYOB. You need to be your own bouncer. Somebody, you've got to go. It's time. You're drunk. You got to get out of here. You know, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. That kind of thing. And they get to the point where they realize that, my goodness, if I were, you know, Beyonce, no one would be in my front row without really having a sense of what is, what's it worth? What's it worth to be here? And are you willing to pay that price of admission? And women tend not to want to stick to their guns because of that. That nurturing turns into
guilt.
It's a straight line a lot of times, but we have to really remap that and untangle that and put those things where they belong.
I remember when I was going through what I call my recovery, my rediscovery of self, and I remember saying to people, you know, I'm sorry I can't be there for you. I'm having to put all that energy on me and be here for me because I'm depleted. I've got nothing else to give you. And, you know, it was very interesting because the reaction I had from people, the piranhas that I had around me, dropped me. That was it. You know, didn't matter 19 years or 20 years of friendship, just dropped me. I was no longer there to serve their misery. And it required them to step up and be there for me. And as piranhas, they weren't going to do that, right? Because they're energy junkies. And it was very interesting walking away. At first, it's the reaction. You know, oh my goodness, was this ever a friendship, right? But walking away and then realizing how much you contributed to that friendship by constantly supplying them the energy they needed from you that left you depleted. And so distancing yourself away from people and then allowing a little time and look back, you really realize how much you were giving and not receiving and how it's so much healthier for you to be away from that relationship, whether it's a friend or even relatives.
Well, and that is one of the reasons that one of the things that keep women from creating those kinds of necessary boundaries. Mm-hmm. And it is a scary step to step back and say, you know what, I have been a contributor. I've paid the price of admission to your life. And not only have I paid the price of admission to be in your life, which it was a nice place to be, it has now become far too expensive for me to continue. I can't. And much love, adieu, sort of thing.
Yes. But that play is over, right?
That's right. And it's not selfish to say I require basic things, certain things. And the fear is I'll be alone. Well, if I were to tell them show's over, gotta go, and there's now suddenly an empty front row, that feels scary, it feels uncomfortable, it feels almost, and I've heard so many say, well then if they aren't there, who would even want to be there?
Yeah.
Well, that's where that rehearsal period comes in, as you were talking about, getting into that moment of, well, what am I putting out? What kind of audience am I attracting, and what kind of audience do I want to? If not them, then who?
Yeah.
And these energies will attract one another, and you have to start right where you're standing. And you can. That's the good news, is that you can.
Well, you know, I mean, here on Self-Discovery Radio, and everybody's story matters, right? And everybody has got a story from where they've come from. And in sharing that story from where they come from, they become an inspiration to other people and an invitation for them to take their own journey. There isn't anybody out there that's walked a straight, perfect line of pure abundance and heavenly glory. And it's just unrealistic. We have the roller coasters in life. We have those ups and downs. We have those desperate moments and those exuberant moments. It's what humanity is all about. And never, ever be ashamed of your story. Never be apologetic over your story. Never feel guilty over your story. Because if you're telling your story, it means you have been willing to walk away from what did not serve you and to rise above it and become more meaningful and purposeful in your own life and therefore in society's life.
Oh, Sarah, I am so glad you said that. I'm so glad you said that. You know, one of the things that I've been quoted for saying it. I've said it a few times. It seems like I've said it more times than I actually have, the way it's quoted. But the first time I said this, it actually brought tears to my eyes when I had a woman who said, "I had no idea that you had endured or you had gone through different things that I shared with her." And I said, "Yes, and it's important for me to tell you that." And she said, "Well, I just can't tell you mine. I mean, if I were to tell you mine, then, you know, it would just take too long. It'd be too hard. It's just too painful." And I said, "You know, my story might be your medicine, but your story might be mine."
Mm-hmm.
And I meant it. And I do mean it, because our stories can be one another's medicine. They really, truly can, and I think they were meant to be.
It's the celebration of each other's courage and strength, isn't it?
It is.
You know, every time we see somebody who's overcome something, no matter what it is, you know, maybe it's abuse or bullying, maybe it is health, maybe it is a lifestyle they've walked away from, you know, being honorable to what they're here to do rather than that cushy, comfy job that they feel very secure at. Anytime that somebody finds their courage and that strength to honor who they are, their purpose and what they're here to be, their beautiful divine soul, it's such a celebration. And that's something I think that when people do decide to walk it and do decide to get there, they realize how much of a fan club they have because they've taken that journey.
We all love to see heroes emerge from the dust. How much has Hollywood made over heroes emerging from the fire, the explosions, the dust, and saying, "I made it. I may be bleeding, scarred, and dirty, but tomorrow I'm going to just look mighty fine in my clean clothes." No, we all love to see the triumph after the tribulation. We love it because we all want to. It creates hope.
Yes,
it inspires us to believe that if they did it and they came from all of these things and they persevered and they survived, and not only survived, but look at them, they're glowing.
Yeah.
I can do it. And that's the truth, is you can. You absolutely can.
And that is the point. We have limited ourselves so much by, again, that dictation of what should be. And we are here to do so much that we've been given the abilities to do. And we really have got to stop limiting ourselves and understand that we're only limited by those beliefs. We're only limited by our lack of courage. We're only limited because we don't want to embrace our strength. When we choose to do that and you start spreading those wings and you start flying, you know, all of a sudden your name is in lights. You know, you've got the leading role and you've got people coming there and applauding your performance because you're authentic, you're true, you're speaking to them. And so many levels, you've become that inspiration that's become that invitation. But you don't get there unless you're willing to take the journey and unless you're willing to do the work.
And the most important thing I always say is to be, for instance, walking out of here and deciding, you know what, I can be a truth fairy. I'm going to tell myself the truth. And when I do, I'm going to tell it loud and proud. I will share it with whomever needs to hear that moment. And it's going to have the power to elevate lives.
Mm-hmm.
We're just here to help one another along. That is why we are here.
Simple, isn't it?
It is. It was said to me many, many years ago, and I thought it was profound. I can't remember the moment my friend said, you know, we're just here to help the next one along. And I thought, yeah, huh, well, that's right. And it really changed a lot of things for me to think of it that way. This, what I have overcome and learned and come into is not an accident. It's on purpose, and it's not for any loss whatsoever.
Exactly. Well, how about you share a little bit of what you've overcome, what you've triumphantly overcome, so people can understand the journey you've taken?
Oh, how many stories. the overcoming, I only see it in hindsight, I'm sure, very clearly. But one of the things, and it's one of the harder things to talk about, but I can, and so many of us have experienced it. There was a systematic kind of very harsh upbringing I had that didn't, it was devoid of a lot of compassion. Child abuse is one of the most eroding and destructive forms of abuse in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent a lot of years trying to learn about what forgiveness meant and how to reconcile what happened to me with my worth.
Mm-hmm.
To have a child that's beaten in the way that I was, and it's hard to even hear myself say still because I don't live in it.
Right.
But to a child that is beaten by a person who is in charge of them and whose responsibility it is to keep them safe and grow them and nurture them.
And supposedly love them.
And supposedly love them is a monkey puzzle that is torturous.
Yeah.
It's absolutely torturous to untangle that. And so the equations I would set up in my mind were, if I were A, then I couldn't be beaten. If I were valuable, there's no way someone could treat a person like this if they were valuable, because mm-hmm. if they knew who I was, they could never do this to me.
Yeah.
If they knew how sensitive I was, there's no way they could raise their hand or their belt or anything. If they knew how much I cared, if they knew how much I wanted to be loved and that I loved them, they could not. If they knew my value, if they only knew who I was, no way could they ever. And I remember even being, I might have been 8 years old, and I was just crying. I was just crying, one of those hiccupy cries that I just couldn't even console myself almost. And I remember saying those very things to myself. I said, if they only knew who you are, they would never do this to you. And I never forgot having that little conversation with myself. Mm-hmm. And yet, the struggle to believe that they were mistaken was a long one. It was very long. And when I did start to realize it, I realized too, and this is a very sad thing also, I couldn't have them in my life as an adult. I tried many different times to invite them back in and to be a part of their lives, but I realized my pain was only, it was really only, it was like burned skin.
Yeah.
It was too great to be with them. And so I had to create a boundary with my own family of origin.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about a hard boundary to create. was very difficult because the stigma that's attached to, well, I'm sorry, I'm estranged from my family. I must be. Now, certainly they're not abusive to me today. If I were to talk to them today, they're not going to say ugly things to me or beat me or, you know,
no,
belittle me.
You have that boundary.
Well, they're not going to do that even if I didn't, you know, if I allowed them access to me, which they don't really pursue because I think they've really come to understand that it's just a matter of my own personal dignity. It's my own dignity where I can't allow unremorseful people to remain in my circle of influence, especially those who have been abusive to me in my life. And talk about the hardest boundaries I've ever had to create, those are with my family of origin. And it's changed me, though. It really has, because my own family that I'm raising, I have four children, I have a husband, I am teaching them to have respect for each other's boundaries, but also to treat each other with dignity and respect, even if you don't enjoy their company. You can manage those boundaries. So the answer is not, I don't like you, you're mean to me, you know, I think you're an awful, horrible, mean person. Well, you know, in families it's complicated, but those are the hardest boundaries to have, sometimes the most necessary, and certainly they don't have to be drastic. They do not have to be you're banned from the theater.
Right.
They can be, okay, you're not in the front row. I'm going
to
put you in.
You belong to a different play altogether.
Or that.
You can play down the road.
Perhaps. Or even during the current performance, it could be, I'm going to put you in some balcony seats here. Yeah. I care that you're here. Thank you for showing up. Thank you so much. Throw fruit and you're out. Yes. But you can sit here and thank you for coming. And you know, that could be very comfortable for everyone.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be this great big, you know,
disconnect.
Yeah, get the samurai sword out and, yes, you know, off yeah. with your heads. It doesn't have to be that. But, you know, that's one of the stories that I carry. And it's now become one of helping me reconcile what was really true about me at that time. And has anything changed about that truth? I was worth treating gently. I was worth treating with compassion. I was worth treating as a precious child. I was worth being cared for and protected. And just because the people who were in, I had no choice but to accept them at that time, just because they refused to offer that to me did not mean I didn't deserve it and I wasn't worth that.
But it's also they were not capable, because anybody who does that, they're in their own pain. They're so consumed by their own pain and patternings. It's probably something that happened to them as well. And either they have not been shown a way out of it, or choose not to do that. I mean, if you have been abused as a child, you would think it would be the very last thing that anybody would want to do to their own children. And yet, that's all they know in that patterning. And when they get angry or frustrated, or, you know, life isn't going their way, they want to take it out on someone. And it's, you know, we look at our own children and say, how in the hell could they? But if that's what's in their DNA, not cosmic imprint, but human imprint, it's all they know. And unless somebody's shown them another path, or denied, you know, wanting to take another path, they're not going to change. We're all responsible for our actions, but we all have an option to change and realize what they are and do something about it. You know, you might not build the brilliant fences, but at least taking an acknowledgement of what you did.
That's right. And that's a big difference, and that's a big step that people can choose to take if they want to. There are times I've spoken to therapists about these things for many years. It was a very good help to me. But, you know, one of the most impacting things they said to me was, I want you to think about your youngest child right now. And at that time, she was 3 years old at that time. And she said, I want you to imagine yourself. And she took me through the steps of the abuse of one incident that I described to her that involved, you know, beating this child. And she said, she took me through the steps that I described that happened to me. She said, do it now. Can you do it now? Do it now. The devastation in my heart and soul, I thought, I got loud. I said, no, 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 I can't. You can't. There's kill me. I can't.
Yeah.
You have to kill me. I can't do it. Right. And she said, well, spare the rod, spoil the child, right? Mm-hmm. What now? And my goodness, I said, then let that be my sin.
Yes.
And it caused me to realize that I had the power to choose at that very moment. Right. Anytime. And I've never been tempted to harm my children, but she illustrated for me the impact that choice makes in our lives. That I am a person that is so far differentiated from the people who raised me that that I can feel safe in my own self, and I can start speaking to myself as a person who is different than that, and who is different than I was treated myself.
Because you made the choice.
I absolutely did, and it's very difficult even still today for me to understand those who do not struggle. I honestly, it's one of my limitations to understand the pattern of not choosing.
Right. Yeah, and that's, you know, for them to own, not you.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, in my own family, my mother was beaten as a child because she wanted to be hugged by her mother. You know, the seventh child, there were nine altogether. It was just, you know, she loved words, she loved listening to her father and the words that she learned, and she just wanted love from her mother, and the mother was not capable of giving it. You know, we're looking back to the 18th century then. My mum was born in 1920, but, you know, it's, you look at the children were brought up to be seen and not heard, and there wasn't affection, there wasn't love, you know, there were so many boundaries placed upon those kids for the wrong reasons. And, you know, I didn't have a family that knew how to hug and how to love. They loved me, and they looked after me to their very best ability, but they never got me. You know, they can never. I was the child that, let's hope she makes a good marriage, she's never going to amount to anything. Because I was not in their comprehension. I was living in a world that was way beyond what they could comprehend. And I remember my sisters, you know, saying, oh, I had this really great interview, and this person really got me. And I sent it to her, and I said, well, what did you think of it? And she said, well, I watched it, but I didn't understand a thing. And it's like, that's okay. They're not there. I could expect them to be on the same plane. This is my journey. This is what I'm here to do. They're not. But what we did come to an agreement of was, stop telling me I'm faulty. Stop telling me there's something wrong with me. And just come to an understanding, I am different from you, and I'm here for a different purpose. And we end up just kind of loving and celebrating each other within those roles. Mm-hmm. And not expecting anything more from them. And in that way, we're not going to get disappointed.
That's a beautiful way to describe the needs for different kinds of boundaries with your family members. Because it's also true, too. It's a sort of boundary you have. It's a boundary of expectation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really important. You know, one of the things that you reminded me of when you were talking to me about that was, you know, my stepfather was a very harsh disciplinarian, and that's the nicest thing I can say about that category of his personality. But he's a smart guy, and he was a very smart guy, and one of the things he'll always say, and usually when he's talking about politics or people who he considers me not as wise or with it as he is, he'd say, well, I don't know. I just can't get there from here. I just can't get there from here. And I always thought, you know, gosh, why not? Why can't you?
Excuse
why can't
me.
You? Why can't you get there? Well, and he may be talking about, you know, things that I can't understand why people would behave X, Y, or Z way. I mean, mm-hmm. there are times when I can agree with that. But when you said what you said just now, it caused me to reflect on that. And I thought to myself, that's what it is. That's what it is, Sarah. They just can't get there.
Right.
Or get here from where they are.
Right.
And without, they certainly they can't meet me where I am without some decisions. They certainly cannot. So, but bless them and their journey. And, you know, that's where I keep it, is just keep it in peace that way. Because I don't have to, we don't have to mourn someone missing from the front row.
Exactly, because somebody else will be in their place, absolutely.
Well, that's right.
And, you know, the thing is also, is, you know, we can talk about pain and things that have happened to us, and yeah, there'll be a certain amount of sadness. And yeah, there's always going to be a certain amount of vulnerability over the pain. But what you've got to be careful of is that you don't make it the main feature in your life. Because then it will consume and dictate and change your role altogether. You can acknowledge your journey and your pain, and that suffering is what's made you who you are today. It's what's made you that strong, beautiful, courageous person. But it's always that little warning light going off of be careful that it doesn't, you know, the pain doesn't upstage you.
That's exactly true. And, you know, to look at things with such, you know, through the lenses of sorrow is a very lonely performance.
Very isolating.
It is. Definitely. But we can all relate to it. We can all understand it, and we can all be there. And that's why I say, in the Truth Fairy experience, I teach women the most beautiful ways to connect when they're used to competing, usually. Connect with each other and with someone sharing a particularly sorrowful or painful story, the most important thing is not to get into their pain with them.
Yes.
Because I can't help you if I'm in the pain with you, because we'll both drown over there. And so there's a boundary there, well, too. I'll say, well, I will meet you in an equal depth of compassion as your pain, and we'll rise from there. And that is the most love anyone can give another person.
Yeah, when I was coaching, I would have the people that just want to keep feeding the pain because they got attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the kind of coaches that recognize the pain. Now, what are we going to do about it?
That's right.
And these are the steps, A, B, C. Now, if you keep want, you know, I understand that there's that elastic band that keeps pulling you back. So what we're going to do is just keep stretch you in a little bit further. But if it gets to a part that you want to keep snapping back because you're more comfortable there, then face what it is to be free of it. I'm sorry, I have to leave you there. Now, for a long time, I used to beat myself up trying to save everybody. And I realized that there's just some people that love the misery. They love the attention they get from it. And if the audience moves on, they just find a new audience. You know, and, you know, you can't help those people because they don't want to be helped. And you are so much better to move on to a different performance altogether, because they'll bring you down.
That's exactly true. And when I encounter women that I'm coaching that way, I will tell them that we have a choice now. I'm meeting you down here. We're going to rise together, and this is what we're going to do. And you're not going to get sucked down here again, because there's something to rise to. And if I jump in there with you, like I said before, if I jump in there with you, we are both going to drown. And if that's what you want to do, if you want to drown, which if you're here with me, you must not really want to. And that usually tells me, one way or the other, are they ready to swim?
And, you know, for some people, the water can be, you know, scary. And then suddenly they realize, hey, water is really comforting. It's got a lot of energy in it, and I like the way it feels. Anything you do for the first time, anything you do that you haven't experienced before, anything in life, whether it is your own self-development or jumping into a new life or just trying on a new dress, everything has a newness to it. And until you kind of get a familiarity and a comfortability with it, you're going to have to adjust or allow yourself the time to kind of feel it. And if the answers aren't there, you know, immediately, you know, like the little downloadable app, life doesn't work that way. You know, there's the instinct that it feels right and give it time. And then there's the other things, I don't feel comfortable, but give it time and I will.
That's right. And, you know, one of the things that I hear from women so often is their barrier to healing is, I just don't trust anyone. How can I ever learn to trust anyone anymore? Because everyone, or these certain people, or these very important people in my life have shown themselves to be so untrustworthy and so hurtful to me. I don't even know how to trust anybody. So how do I trust you to even help me? And it becomes this big tangled up thing of just hot bubblegum that they remain and they feel stuck in. And one of the most beautiful things that I learned, it's probably been about 10 years ago, I had a really wise man say to me once, because I was in the trust tangle, and he said, "Donna, you don't have to trust anyone." And I was a little taken aback by that, because I thought, well, wait a minute, we're supposed to trust people. I like to trust people. I want to trust people. What do you mean I don't have to trust anybody? He said, "No, honey." He said, "Here's what you want." And I've teach this so many times over and over again. This man is long retired, and this lesson should never retire. Mm-hmm. So I teach it and teach it. And he said, "You only need to trust yourself. And here's how you do it. It's like this. Number one, you trust that you will know what you're seeing when you see it. And that when you do see it, you will know what to do about it. Even if at first you think you don't know, you will know. You will know. And when you do know what to do or how to respond, that you will respond in a way that takes care of yourself. And that's all." And my goodness, I was able to trust people without fear. I mean, I had to practice, don't get me wrong.
Right,
it's something I had to practice doing, but I had to be aware of okay, I see something happening here, and I know what I'm seeing, and I trust what I'm seeing. So now what do I need to do about this? And sometimes it took me a little bit of time to figure out what I needed to do about it. And when I did know what to do about it, I followed through. I did what I needed to do about it in my own best interest, not to the exclusion of anyone else's interest necessarily, not that I would disregard anyone else's feelings or whatever. It was, I need to take care of myself. And if that means somebody doesn't get tickets to the next show, then that's what that means.
Yeah.
But I trusted myself that I knew, I trusted what I was seeing. I trusted my senses. And people who come from abusive situations or just ones where they're undermined or just where they just don't trust themselves at all, they find that's the key. That's one of the keys to freedom right there, is learning that three-step process and trusting yourself and just practicing it, because that's what any of us are doing. We're just practicing.
And the thing is that when, you know, the more and more comfortable you are in your journey, the more and more comfortable you come with yourself, you know, the more and more, you know, challenges you're going to face, and more you're going to accomplish them, because you've got not only the courage and the strength, but you've gained the knowledge and the tools in which to do it. And it's interesting, again, the audience, the metaphorical audience out there, mm-hmm. the people around you and how they change towards you. You know, whereas they may be used to be critical or judgmental or even ignoring you, or suddenly paying attention to you. Somebody wanting to interact with you, asking you things, because suddenly you've now become that beacon of wisdom or that beacon of inspiration, or just that sheer joy that you never were before. You know, I think one of the challenges that I had was got my soul ignited. It's, you know, firing up, on my heart's firing up. I forgot to live in my spirit.
Mm.
I forgot to live in my joy. All my joy and everything was the people I was serving. And I forgot to give it to myself until I realized, you know, there's something missing. Where's my joy? You know, I love what I do, but am I loving who I am when I'm doing for myself outside of this? And I think we forget that, and that's such an enormous part of who we are. If we are, and the thing is, when you are doing something that you love doing, it's not a job, it's a lifestyle. It's who you are. But you've also got to remember to sometimes put that same attention on yourself and be that nurturer for yourself and live in some joy yourself. And that just, again, it becomes that invitation to everybody else, that resonance, that your vibration that you're leaving out to everybody.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so glad you said that, too. If I only listened to what you said today and I was not even able to respond. I would listen to this thing five times. I'm telling you, the things you say are so tremendous. You know, after we talked some time ago, you were talking about this a little bit then too, if I remember, and I decided to up my joy game a little bit because you inspired me. And as my husband and I were going to a sporting event that he and I just love it. We are cuckoo like kids when we get in the car by ourselves. You'd think we were just fools. And I said to him, I said, honey, we're going to the game. We're going to the game. I'm so excited. I said, we are having so much fun. And he said, yep. And I said, oh, you know what? Right here, right now, I'm going to stamp this time right now, and I'm going to file that in my joy folder. I'm having some joy right now, and by God, I'm going to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And it was good to stop for a minute and just recognize,
yes,
I'm having joy.
Yes.
Oh my God, I'm having joy. And because it just like the weather, you know, happy times come and joy comes and sadness and sorrow and exhilaration, just the whole thing. We get to taste it all, and we can file them in the appropriate folders, you know. And if I want to double click on a joy moment, I go back there and say, oh, that was so much joy.
And you know, that's what memories are meant to be about.
That's
it's
right.
Not just remembering, you know, oh, I found strength and courage to overcome my burdens and take off that coat, you know, that was not serving me anymore. But, you know, what did you do to celebrate? You know, and it's so good to look at a picture and go, I remember that event. I did this and I did that and I felt this and I felt that. And it's like we've got to remember that we have to create, you know, that photo album of joy along the way. Because we need to revisit them now and again to remind us to step back into joy, but also to revisit and to see how much joy we've actually accumulated in our lives.
Oh, it's so true. And, you know, I'm a writer. I am like a writer to my cellular level of myself. That's one of my gifts. And when I'm thinking about these happy times or these joyful times that I can reflect on, there are times when I feel like, you know what, I'm kind of feeling like some joy right now. You know, I may have taxes sitting on the corner of my desk right now that are staring me down like a bully in a bar, man. And I'm like, but I need some joy right now. It's not that I'm not going to deal with this, but not at this second. I'm going to invigorate myself. And just like when I write, I can choose to get a blank page open and say, okay, what am I going to write? What am I going to write right now? And I can go live my life like I'm writing. I can decide I'm going to, you know, get in a water balloon fight with my 9-year-old son. Mm-hmm. Why not? And I haven't done that yet this summer, so that's my plan. Because that's going to be some joy right there, because that little boy can laugh like no one else on the planet.
And laughing is so contagious, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
I mean, my son this morning at 7 o'clock started texting me. You know, normally you can't kind of get hold of him until later in the day. And he put an offer on a house yesterday, and he got it. And he could have called me, but we're texting back and forward. Did you get this? Did you get that? What about this? And what about that? And then he's coming over tonight. We're going to celebrate. And it's simple joys, you know, celebrating each other's lives. And you know, it's those moments that we live for. You know, we want to be of service to the world. We want to know we count. We want to know that we're contributing. We want to know that we're seen for who we are and what we are contributing. And at the same time, we want to have that joy and that kindness and that love and that exuberance for life, because we've taken us so goddamn seriously. And, you know, we've forgotten how to play. And, you know, I deliberately go on Facebook and look at silly animal pictures and cats and people doing funny things, because it lifts my spirit up and it makes me smile and it makes me feel a sense of joy. And perhaps if we fed that more instead of all the circus that's going on, you know, we would change that vibration that's going on.
Oh, I agree. You know, there are little moments of joy, just like you're saying, that I can write a moment as soon as we get done with this interview. In fact, I think I'm going to, when we get done, I'm going to send a selfie to one of my best good friends who's not expecting it. She's in the middle of her work day, of me making some sort of obnoxious face that she would never expect me to capture on film. Like, because she could send it to people. She could post it on Facebook and I would have no power on that. But why not?
Exactly.
Because it will surprise her. She will laugh. And I know she will have to wait for herself to stop laughing and then try to call me and say, are you crazy?
Yeah. Yeah.
And a little bit, probably.
You can't get through life without some crazy. Crazy is an ingredient you must have in your life. It's what your courage is. It's what allows you to be adventurous. If you haven't got an ingredient of crazy within you, you're going to be dull and boring. So embrace your craziness.
That's right. You know, my husband, he's like a modern day Ricky Ricardo to my
Nice.
He's South Asian, but he's just got this. He's a physicist engineer, and it's like if Ricky were a physicist engineer and not from Cuba and didn't play the bongos, and Lucy was sort of pursuing enlightenment in a way that helps the world as much as she can instead of trying to cover the grocery money. I don't know, but so many years in our the first couple of years of our marriage, sometimes. Are you crazy? He would ask me, and I'd say, a little bit, yeah, a little bit. And he would just laugh. But somebody who like him who's so serious,
yes,
he's such a serious character. And I said, well, honey, why did you, you picked a kind of a crazy, silly woman, He goes, yeah, I did.
Because you put the crazy out in him, and that's what he needed, right?
He laughs on the outside. Yeah. For the longest time, he'd say, well, I'm laughing on the inside. Well, what's wrong with you? Let's hear it.
Yes.
Prove it. That's right.
Your belly laugh.
That's right. And so we should challenge one another to experience laughter that hurts.
I know that one of my disciplines for my kids when they were fighting is I'd go into opera. Just to drive them crazy. And it distracted them from eating each other up.
Okay. So I have just gained some valuable feedback and some, because I am ready. I am ready. I will do it. I will do it. Thank you for that. That's a gift.
Another one I used to do is make them hug and kiss each other when they were fighting. And they were so busy that they forgot, and that's the point, is reminding them really and doing it through something silly.
Oh my god, opera, that's gonna be it.
Dancing idiotically,
One of the things I do to my kids that does help them a little bit, I'll put my earbuds in and play like a playlist of probably like Usher or something crazy, or like Sir Mix-a-Lot, something, big butt song, and just go to town. Go crazy right in front of them. They can't hear what I'm listening to, but it is a show.
Yes, exactly.
It is a scene, and then they stop what they're doing and take a look, and they have different responses. But I'm telling you, Sarah, I think I've got a good mind to go down to the costume store and buy myself a Viking braid get-up. I've always wanted one. I don't know why, but it's something I should have right here in my office.
Well, what you'd like to do at home is then when it came to Oscar night, everybody had to dress up, and my kids always used to put on, performances for us, and I had another family with three kids, and we used to get together, and the kids would get together and put on these performances, and of course they were dreadful, but they were wonderful, and they were over the top and dramatic, and they made you laugh, and they made you smile, but I just loved that sense of expression and freedom, and, it's wonderful. It's always those little silly things that lifts us up, that makes us smile.
And those are the memories that build the best relationships and families, aren't they?
Yes, absolutely. Anger is a reaction to something that's happening in the moment. Be reaction to that moment. Say your piece. Don't stay there. Because otherwise you're living in the anger and you can't even remember what you've been angry about.
And it's just it's an energy black hole.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It really, really is.
Total sucker. And you can't live in, upbeat kumbaya joy all the time, because that's the real estate. I did a wonderful show called Lucifer's Game. And it's and what I love about this guy, he's written a book, Lucifer's Game. And Lucifer is our shadow side. You know, and yin and yang is the dark and the light. We need both. And we're not meant to be completely in the dark and completely in the light. But if we look at anything that has any depth, it has shadowing, it has shading. And that's what gives it such beautiful depth and such light. And we need to find that balance and that collaboration between our light and dark. But he's formed a complete blog where he answers people's questions as Lucifer. And it's hilarious, you know.
That it's creepy, but I'm intrigued.
Yes, no, he's such a gas, and it's, you know, so intriguing, and you're really tongue-in-cheek as well. But it's at the same time, don't take yourself so, you know, so seriously. And, you know, and stop making everything so heavy. You know, in the discovery of self, you can be light about it and peel back your layers and be in discovery. It doesn't always have to be so, you know, dark and deep and, you know, in overcoming things, again, inject some of that joy into it, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, one of my favorite things to do in the wide world, you ask anyone who knows, who's in my front row, ask any of my front row people, they will say, I laugh like nobody else. Because I love to laugh. And if I don't laugh really hard, like I'm talking about muscle crampy, pee your pants a little bit laughing, at least every 3 days after that, I get start to get a little funky. I'm not very pleasant if I don't get something to laugh about. And so that's one of the things with the stuff, the work I do. I know this stuff is hard. I know nobody really wants to do it. Not really. I mean, they do it when they're just done. They just they got nothing else they can do. But when you realize that I'm not going to let you do this stuff without, we're gonna have a spoonful of sugar with this because we can.
You're right.
Because we can, because some of this stuff is so absurd. Right. Because some of the stuff we're dealing with in the world is so absurd.
Yes.
I mean, it hurts, but when we really look at it, it's just absurd. And when we can look at it in a way that we can take the poison out of it with our laughter sometimes. Yeah. There's a time to be serious, and there's also a time to lighten up.
You know, even our pain. You know when you have an owie, and you know, especially like if you go for a massage, does this hurt? Yes, but it's releasing me. It's okay. And you know, ow! Yeah, but at the same time, you know, it's setting you free. So you'll put up with the pain, right? And kind of laugh, cry all the way through it.
But, yes.
You know, that's what it's about.
Right? That's right. That's right. This poor dear that's going to get this obnoxious selfie from me very shortly is a massage therapist, in fact. And many times I say, hey, ow. Hold still. It's okay. Let it go. Take a deep breath. And, you know, I've learned a lot from just listening to her help me get through the ouch, ow, ow. Yeah. And
the
so.
Oprah.
Oh, lady. I swear. We both need matching yellow braid sets. We do.
Oh, you know, I always got this song in the back of my head whenever I do anything. You know, they're coming to take me away. Ha ha, hee hee, ha ha. You know? And I've been looking over my shoulder all my life, but they haven't caught me yet.
Well, keep running, woman.
I have to run. They're just too slow. I'm way ahead of them.
You got a big lead on them, huh?
I do. Yes, I just put them in a different theater. Oh, dear. Well, that's the point of life, isn't it? Is just get out and enjoy it. You know, like, deal with your shit. You know, because we've all got it. And, you know, carrying this manure on your back all the time, you know, it doesn't make you smell very nice, you know, to yourself or to anyone else. So let it go. Go and take a nice, refreshing, cleansing spiritual shower and start embracing who you're meant to be in celebration, in abundance, in expectation of all your possibilities. And be willing to take that journey because you're not going to live until you do.
That's right.
So tell me, how do people, you've got a registration, you've got a free access gift here right now, tools to help your own boundary map, and also how do the, you know, get to be a part of the Truth Fairy Project?
Well, I still have some free tickets available for the boundary map free preview that's happening on August 28th. It's over on my website, donnasyed.com. You'll find that link right on the front page. It's easy to find. And I'm going to open 10 seats for the Boundary Map Masterclass on September 3rd. The way we come together in these small groups, it just really amplifies the growth experience in ways that I never anticipate how deep and wonderful it's going to be. It's just beautiful to see women break free. But those two things are going to be available with the free preview. You sign up on my list and you get those tickets to get into those previews. And I'm going to send you the Boundary Map worksheet that lets you just really see what's going on in your life in a way that doesn't feel too uncomfortable. You just get to see what it is. And then we talk about it. And you know what, I also am going to do right away with your tickets is the Boundary Map Big Six Check Yourself Out checklist, so that you can see kind of where you are in the boundary. Do I have really serious boundary issues, or what's catching me up and what's going on? So I can kind of assess myself and see where I am with my boundaries. So those are the two things I'm going to give you with the free preview. Those are things that'll take you a long way. And that preview, I put as much goodness and good stuff into that 45 minutes as I can, because I want you to have enough to take off running with and fill your tool belt up.
It's also a good way of changing the mindset, so when they do finally get to you, they're ready to receive.
Absolutely, absolutely. So just taking a look at those boundaries, even if you're just taking a look at them, that can change everything. So that's what I want to give every woman who is ready to grab on. Every single one of you, it doesn't matter where you are, because Boundary Map meets you right where you are, and you can start. You're not behind. No way. Mm-hmm. You cannot be behind. You're right on time.
Yeah, when you're ready to step into your life, it is now time.
That's right.
But again, you know, nothing's going to be accomplished if you're not willing to take the journey. And yes, there's some work to be done, but you know, how you go through that work is up to you. You know, please leave your violin at the door. It's not that kind of musical. Right?
That's right.
And, you know, it's the old tom-toms and the castanets and, you know, whatever. But it's about, you know, getting into the beat of your life and, you know, not into the, you know, the funeral music with which you've been living by, or the drama, the soap opera music. So, you know, it's again, you've got to choose your role in life, don't you?
You absolutely do, and the best news about it all is that you can.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Wonderful talking to you. We know we get to do this again.
Absolutely.
So Donna Syed, syed.com, thetruthfairyproject.com. You can also get her on Facebook at Donna Syed Official, and on Twitter, Donna Syed. And you'll see here on the posting the registration link to the Boundary Map for August 28th. And we'll also have some information here about the September project as well. Please do get in touch with Donna, even if you just want to get in touch with her and have a chat, just to, you know, find out if she's your signature or not. But please do something. Don't just sit in your misery, because you cannot, you know, be or do or live until you're willing to take action. And she's right there to help you along the way. And you know you're going to have fun. And that is in itself is a gift. Thank you so much for being with me here today, Donna.
Thank you so much too, Sarah.
So folks, it's up to you. Yeah, your journey is waiting for you. Your life is waiting for you. You're meant to be a participant in your own life. Write your own script. Get on that stage, put the spotlight on yourself, and deliver, because you know you can. Until next time.